8 o'clock, Jim and the Buckeye Boy, who's now going to truly become an honest man. Does he, well, you pop the question to your girlfriend during the Thanksgiving break.
Yes, I do.
Congratulations, buddy.
Thank you. I'm a real boy now.
So, I'm so proud of you, Pinocchio.
I'm a real boy.
So, Karen was with dinner full faculties, right?
Yes.
You try to imply that you had liquored her up, and she's like, sure, sound like a, you're, sure. Am I going on a trip? Sure, I'll marry you.
Yeah, no, she's
okay, well,
she
good.
Was fully aware.
Good, okay. Fully functioning,
yes.
Of sound mind.
She was.
And she said, okay, sure, why
she
not?
She was a willing accomplice.
Well, congratulations once again.
Thank you.
All right, so a lot to get to today. We have pole dancing, top five NFL, top five college football with the Peter Jackson Beatles documentary out. Our top five Beatles songs today. If you want to chime in on that, you certainly can. Your thoughts about early thoughts about the Broncos and Chiefs Sunday night football right here on the team. Can Denver win in Kansas City and snap the 11-game losing streak to the Chiefs? So I've got some thoughts on that today. College football coaching carousel continues to spin around and around. Brian Kelly, if you've not heard, Notre Dame coach, heading to the SEC to take over for Ed Orgeron. So Brian Kelly brings stability. There's no doubt about that. It's a program that needs that. And Brian Kelly does afford that. If you're a Notre Dame fan, you've seen the consistency from the Fighting Irish during his time there. And LSU needs that. So if you got some thoughts on that, text or call us 970-242-1340. All right, we have our final, we call them like exit interviews, wrapping up the season. Final one for the college, for the high school football season. Joining us right now, we can talk a little Montrose Indians football with Brett Mertens.
Time to get in the huddle with Montrose coach Brett Mertens on the team.
And with us right now, the Chick-fil-A Breakfast Team phone line, he's the head coach of the Montrose Indians, Brett Mertens. Brett, I appreciate the time. Thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, guys.
That had to be probably the toughest loss you've had as a high school football coach. I mean, you're in the 4A state semifinals. Your team's the number one team. You have a two-score lead in the fourth quarter. Can't hold on to that lead. That just that has to rank up there as one of the most heartbreaking losses you probably have ever gone through.
Yeah, it's number one. I've been coaching, well, either as a player or as a coach for 25 consecutive years, and that's the toughest loss in my entire life. So it was, you know, I told the boys the same thing. I was like, we're all in the same boat. None of us are going to have a tougher one than that. So it's tough to overcome. I mean, we were fortunate to be in the position we were in, so you got to keep things in perspective. But yeah, when we had it, you know, we had the game we felt like in our grasp, and series of events there, the last 5 minutes of the game went off and weren't able to come out with the win. So tough one to swallow for sure, but, you know, we'll move on.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a very good Erie football team, but you had the 28-14 lead, you know, and then they have the onside kick. And I know that in the comments you made in the Montrose Free Press that you felt like you didn't have your guys ready for that, and they just they came up with the onside kick, able to score. You guys had the fumble. You were driving. I believe that you were at their 40. You had the fumble there, and a couple of just really tough miscues late in that football game that, you know, they came back to haunt you.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, we didn't. Overall, I mean, we had a few chances to make some plays, you know, and our kids did. But credit to Erie, they made the plays that they needed to make there, you know, at the end. You know, the onside kick was probably the biggest play that sticks out in my mind, obviously. You know, and the frustrating thing there is, you know, we should have seen it. You know, they hit the kid over on the sideline, so it was the old hidden player trick, which the other frustrating thing about that, and I don't want to dwell on this, but it's an illegal play. You know, and you're not supposed. It's an act of deception, which is clearly defined in the rules. And so, the refs actually did flag it, and then they got together and they picked it up, which hurts a little bit more even. So, I don't know. It's one of those where I guess at the end of the day, it just wasn't meant to be. It wasn't our day. But there's definitely some frustration there. That's for sure.
Brett Mertens, Montrose football coach, with us. They lose to Erie 29-28 in the 4A semifinals. So what did the referee come and say to you on why they picked up the flag on that, Brett? I find that interesting.
Yeah, well, I think they were maybe potentially debating the wrong call. You know, the illegal participation rule applies to scrimmage snaps. You're not. What they're trying to do is get rid of the deception of having a kid stand right next to the sideline and pretend that he's not in the game, and then they snap the ball and throw it to him. You know, and same thing right. on a kick. It's kind of a similar idea where you pretend you're not in the game, and they had all 10 of their guys huddled up, you know, on the far hash, and then they had the one kid standing over there by their coaches. And so the rule is actually in place to get rid of that exact play, you know. And so the explanation I got was that the kid actually did report inside the numbers, which is another frustrating one, because when you watch the video, he didn't. So it was, you know, they missed the call, and they actually have admitted that, but that doesn't, you know, do a lot of good. But it's not the, you know, it's not the only reason we lost, but it certainly was a big crucial play in that game, and it's frustrating to have that happen in a game of that magnitude, that's for sure.
Brett Mertens, Montrose football coach, with us today on the Team Sports Network. So as we, you know, look ahead to next football season, you obviously lose a lot of talented players, but you have Gage Wareham back for his junior year as your quarterback, Blake Griffin as well, who had a good game on Saturday. So the cupboard is certainly not bare for your football team heading into next season.
No, and that's one of the things that, you know, unfortunately the last few years we've been able to kind of stabilize our numbers, and we've had pretty good freshman classes coming up every year and stuff. So, you know, we feel like the program's in a good spot as a whole. We're excited for every year, honestly. It's going to be a new challenge. We graduate a bunch of good kids, like you said, and the young kids that haven't had a chance to play varsity will need to hit the weight room and you know, step up into those roles next year. So every year is different. Every year is a new challenge. You know, we certainly look forward to that when the time comes. There's a lot of time between now and then for kids to improve and get better, and every team kind of has that new fresh start now. So the kind of a reset for everybody.
Indians football coach Brett Mertens with us today on the Team Sports Network. And look, I know we've talked a lot about the semifinal game, but let's think about, you know, obviously what you guys accomplished this year, Brett, was, you know, you won a league title. You're the number one seed in the 4A football playoffs. I mean, there, you know, you're undefeated going to that game at Erie. I mean, there's so many positives to talk about with the kind of season your team had that, you know, you hate to focus on the loss to Erie because of really what you guys accomplished this year.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, when you look at it big picture like that, it was a remarkable season. And our kids came together. They played extremely well. We played a really tough schedule and beat a lot of really good teams and a lot of really close games and down to the wire finishes that were exciting. We were fortunate for most of those to go our way, frankly, throughout the year. And so, yeah, no doubt. I mean, it was a great run, you know, and it was kind of one of those where, you know, frankly, it was probably one of our best seasons ever. You know, and then ended with, you know, what, probably the biggest heartbreak ever too. So it was a mixed emotions and something that I'll tell you what, we'll never forget this season. It was, I know all of our kids won't either. It'd be something they remember the rest of their life, and I think in a positive way, you know. So that's really what it's all about, and helping kids kind of, you know, achieve their goals and do things they maybe didn't think they could do and move on and become better men once they graduate high school. So, you know, I certainly think when you look at those things, we did a good job this year, and our kids had a great experience. So definitely proud of all of that.
You got some thoughts about the state title game, Erie and Chatfield?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how healthy Chatfield is. Like, I know, you know, Erie's got some talent. I think Chatfield probably matches up with them pretty decent. I don't know. You know, Chatfield runs kind of a funky offense, so it would be interesting to see if Erie can stop that. I think if I was going to pick a team that I thought would be the favorite, it's probably Erie, but You know, Chatfield's got a lot going for them right now. They've beat some good teams here, and I think anything could happen. I think I've told you that once we got down to the final eight, I thought any of those eight teams could win it on any given day. So we'll see what happens. But
are you going to try to watch it on Saturday? Or is it
too fresh? Not, to
too,
be honest.
Yeah, too fresh, too raw right now. I don't blame you. I don't know if I could.
Yeah, no, I probably won't. So I don't know. I mean, it's you know, I'll be happy for whatever team wins, but you know, it's probably not going to be something I want to tune into on Saturday, knowing that we should be there. So it's all right.
Yeah, I understand. As a high school football player at Fruita, we lost in the semifinals. Lost, you know, in not the exact fashion you guys did, but had a lead and couldn't hold it late, and didn't get to play in the state title game. So. Yeah, I from a going way back to my high school football playing days, I do sympathize. But you guys had such a great season, such a remarkable season, going undefeated all the way to the semifinal game. Hey, Brett, I appreciate it. One final thing before we go, is there a kid or two that, you know, we talk so much about, you know, obviously Gage Wareham and Austin Griffin and, you know, all the guys that you've had this year, Ethan Hartman, you know, all those, you know, players that have really stepped up and had big seasons, especially those seniors. Was there a kid or two that was, you know, always out there practice, you know, kind of scout team stuff, that was just one of those kids that always helped guys get better? They may not have been a star themselves, but put the time in, the work in, or just such great teammates and helped their teammates get better. Is there a couple of those kids you're going to think back on in regard to this team that kind of fit that criteria?
Oh, man, I tell you what, I mean, how much time you got? Because this particular group of seniors, especially, really bought into to being a team, and when you start thinking about what it takes to be successful, you know, your senior class really sets the tone for that, you know. And so, you know, I can go all the way down the line. I mean, you've talked, you know, about Austin and how he, you know, handled his injury there at the end of the year and kept being a good teammate and all that. I mean. You know, a kid that had a phenomenal year and has gotten some recognition, but Bodie Griner I think he's leading the entire state in tackles now. Just an outstanding year played. The fascinating thing about that is you lead the state in tackles as a linebacker. You know, he's, in my opinion, a no-brainer all-state linebacker. And then he lines up on the other side of the ball and plays offensive line for us. And I don't think very many of those other kids do that. So he's probably one of the toughest kids, you know, in the state of Colorado, and certainly happy we had him on our team. You know, we had a big defensive end, Ashton Oberg, that, you know, he also is getting ready now to go play basketball with Coach Vohringer and them, and he finished the year with 13 sacks. He had six forced fumbles on those sacks where he knocked the ball out from the quarterback, just a huge difference maker. And then he would turn around and play tight end and just block as hard as he possibly could on the offensive side. And so it was, you know, he had a great year. You know, Luke Barney is a kid that I don't know how, but he kind of flew under the radar. He's, you know, he's a 6'5", 280-pound kid that, in my opinion, should be getting recruited by some pretty big-time schools. You know, he's playing defensive line and a little bit of offensive line for us. Bought in, team captain, just had a phenomenal year, you know. Let's see, Isaac Lovato played left tackle for us this year. A kid that definitely flew under the radar. No one really even knew his name, but by the end of the year, he was performing at a really high level. What other seniors? Ethan Hartman, I mean, we talked about him. The kid had 1,800 yards of offense for us from our wing position on limited touches. So just a phenomenal kid. Gabe Miller across from him, senior that complimented Ethan on the other side, had a huge season, his best season of the year by far. Let's see. Kane Ela, I mean, there's a kid that is a fullback, an outside linebacker, and Raul Rascon gets hurt in the first game of the year, and we move him to left guard, and he plays the rest of the year at guard for us. Helps us, you know, we don't go undefeated without him. So, you know, you got him, you got Hunter Duke, Julian McFarland, both in the secondary that had great years. Hunter had a couple picks against Palmer Ridge. So, I mean, you can go all the way down the line. I'm sure I'm Bridger Kurtz. I mean, a kid that gets, you know, loses the starting quarterback position in the second game of the year, and he, instead of pouting, he decides, I'll go be the best wide receiver I can be and help the team. You know, I had three big catches against Bruda in that close game. So, I don't know. It was a special senior class. They led really well, and they set a good standard for what other teams are going to have to follow. So, you know, I apologize for just going on and on.
No, but that's okay. I asked the question, so I'm glad. I mean, it's great that you have so many kids that you felt like had sensational seasons and obviously made major contributions to you guys having the kind of year that you did. Do you have some guys that you know right now that are going to sign to play college football?
The best prospects, honestly, are Ashton Oberg as either a defensive end or a tight end. And I think he probably, if he wants to, he probably will get on somewhere. But nothing really in ink yet or anything.
Sure.
Luke Barney's definitely a prospect at the next level. And then Bodie Griner as well as a linebacker. To me, those three are probably the most likely three that might go on and play somewhere. But, I don't know. I talked to Bodie yesterday, and it was one of those deals where it's just such a long emotional season, and you're just, you know, exhausted at the end of it. And I said, "What do you want to do?" And he's like, "I don't even know, Coach. I just need a couple weeks to relax and not think about football for a little bit." So we'll see when the dust settles here, and I can kind of help them get their film up and figure out what they want to do. But you know, even if none of them do, I think at the end of the day they'll all look back with good memories on what was a great senior year, and you know, we're certainly proud of them for that. And if they do decide they want to go play, then I think whoever ends up getting them is going to get some really good players and some even better people. So I would certainly endorse all of them.
Well, we'd love to have them as CMU Mavs here in town. It'd be great to have them part of Coach Jackson's program if that's to be. But, Brett, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Hope you and your family had a really good Thanksgiving. I know it was a work day for you as well last week and getting ready for Erie, but I do appreciate the time, all the time you've come on during the season. So congratulations again on a great season. Tough loss at Erie, but still a lot of wonderful memories for Montrose football fans.
Yep, it sure was. Thank you very much.
Take care. Brett Mertens, coach of the Montrose Indians football team. All right, 8:17, Jim along with the Buckeye boy today. Text or call us 970-242-1340. So get to the text line. Early thoughts about the Broncos and Chiefs. Can Denver get it done Sunday night? 11-game losing streak to Kansas City. Got to go to Arrowhead. The bright lights of Sunday night football. But this is a battle for first place right now in the AFC West. Got some thoughts on that today. Text or call us 970-242-1340. Jim giving you a congrats, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
On the nuptials. JJ, I had no idea Michigan would actually win. None. Also happy Rio's impending nuptials.
Thank you. The nuptials is on me. The Michigan win is on him.
Mike with a congratulations for you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Also Andy with a congrats.
Thank you.
Drew Locke has had numerous opportunities to take the spot, yet he looks unprepared, disinterested, and continues to make bad decisions. Jeff with a congratulations to you.
Thank you.
She must be a good woman to put up with all your Ohio bias. Wish you two the best.
Yes.
She's a delightful person.
She's a delight.
All right. So we'll take a break. We'll come back. 8:19.
Crunching some numbers over here, by the way, too.
About?
We had a text about Teddy Bridgewater and his stats. So I've been crunching some numbers. I won't say the results will surprise you because they probably won't. But I do have numbers in regards to this texter's text.
All right, so let's go ahead and play Stadium Cinema right now.
Let's do it.
Know your sports TV shows and movies? Let's play Stadium Cinema on the team.
And so what's up for grabs today?
A couple of wonderful, delightful prizes as I vamp to fill time. A meal deal of at Qdoba, an entree, tortilla, chips and salsa, and dessert. Or a case of New Belgium courtesy of our friends over at High Country Beverage.
Excellent.
Yes. Excellente. This movie is what I want. This sports classic.
There's still 4 seconds left. We can beat these guys.
All right.
All right. First correct answer wins. If you've won the last 2 weeks, you have to sit it out. Text in now. Chick-fil-A Breakfast Team phone line 970-242-1340. That's 970-242-1340. We will take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk some Broncos next with our Broncos insider, Mike Rice, from 850 KOA, brought to you by Gallagher's Flooring and ComWest.
Good morning, gentlemen. What are the haps?
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team. Time to get in the huddle with the Broncos Radio Network's Mike Rice on The Team.
With us right now on the Chick-fil-A Breakfast Team phone line from 850 KOA, the Broncos Radio Network, Mike Rice joins us. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm well, Jim. How's it going?
It's going well. You and the family have a wonderful Thanksgiving?
Low-key, but very, very nice. Yeah,
oh, that's always good. Always
how good. About for you guys?
Kind of like with you. Low-key, perfect.
Just there you go.
Nice and chill. Yeah, we threw the football around a little bit, didn't actually play a game. Nobody got hurt. I mean, it was good. Everybody came out with no injuries, no trips to the ER, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, that's always a win right there.
Yeah, and speaking of a win, how about that Broncos win on Sunday? Look, you had the Chargers coming in, you know, averaging about 28 points per game. They've been red hot offensively. And what does Denver do? They go out and, you know, get a couple of picks. Patrick Surtain with by far his best game as a Bronco. An unbelievable performance by that offensive line, that patchwork offensive line. Broncos get a win against the Chargers, which sets the stage for a huge Sunday night game in Kansas City.
So many things they did well, weren't there? And they did enough offensively, you know, with the 28 points, which was good to see. And as you mentioned, that offensive line, which has been so beset by injuries, but a lot of the young guys really coming on, Browning and Williams and Miners and Bailey, and I mean, so many different contributors. And defensively, Jim, they got back to that effort that they had against Washington and some of the other, you know, games where they really were lights out. They're capable of playing pretty well. And when they do play pretty well, especially at home, they can be a handful.
Mike Rice, 850 KOA, Broncos Radio Network with us. Ground game was very effective. Javonte Williams, Pukki with another, you know, solid performance, finding the end zone. Melvin Gordon continues to be, you know, he's had his issues with fumbles and turnovers, Mike, but he continues to be really productive in that backfield. And like I was saying, you know, what the job that those two guys did behind that offensive line, which only had Lloyd Cushenberry on the field as a week one starter, that says a lot about what the Broncos ground game was able to accomplish against a pretty good front seven for the Chargers.
Yeah, really remarkable to me. I mean, to see them dominate. They just didn't play well. They really dominated, I thought. And, you know, for a unit that's being kind of patched together and, you know, guys without a lot of experience and guys that haven't played together very much, they're really acquitting themselves very well, and I think it's exciting to see. You know, I'd still like to see them run the ball more, but, you know, hey, they at least, you know, were effective when they did, and obviously they were able to weather the storm with Teddy out there, you know, being out of the lineup for a bit with the leg injury, and he obviously gutted it out. Jim, I don't know how you saw it, but I know there's been quite a bit of discussion in the day or two since the game, but there's no question Teddy Bridgewater's the number one quarterback of this team. I don't even think it's an issue now. And the question is, you know, how effective, how consistent can he be heading down the stretch when the Broncos have a lot of things in their own control?
And I think the way that he came back in the game, he had the shin injury, came back in, and helped to guide this team to the, you know, the late touchdown drive. He had the touchdown run, touchdown pass to Saubert, as, you know, the offensive numbers were, you know, from a, you know, throwing the football standpoint, were not epic by any stretch of the imagination, but he played well, came back in, you know, with an injury, and in light of what happened in the whole business decision situation with Philadelphia, it seemed like the Teddy maybe won some people back by showing his determination to come back and play in that game hurt.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing what it'll do when you actually put forth the effort and you win, right? He made a mistake, and I think he admitted that on that tackle that wasn't against Philly. He should have at least tried to make a play, at least tried to make contact, and he didn't. And I think he recognized that. I don't think that has defined the way he's played through much of his career, but clearly that was not a shining moment. But he played well enough, and he was able to Jim, the fact he got back on the field in that game on Sunday was critical because, you know, small sample size, whatever the reason, Drew Lock didn't have it. And I don't know if he'll ever have it, but they needed Teddy Bridgewater to come back in on Sunday.
Mike Rice, 850 KOA, Broncos Radio Network with us today on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network. But even with, you know, Teddy playing hurt and all those things, and a Broncos win against the Chargers, Mike, we still have people that are texting into our program that still feel like that Drew Lock should be this team's starting quarterback. And I find that interesting that there are people that still have that feeling about Lock even after, you know, another game where he gets a chance to come in and play, makes a really bad decision, throws a terrible pick to Derwin James, but there's still people that feel like this team would be better off with Drew Lock as its quarterback. And I don't understand that at this point.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I went back and forth in a good way with some folks on social media after the game on that same topic. And, you know, at some point in talking with folks who do believe that, number one, that's cool if you do. Certainly you're entitled. It gets to the point pretty quickly where you just start talking in circles. Well, Drew hasn't gotten the opportunities, but he hasn't earned the opportunities. Yeah, but Teddy, you know, the turnovers are way down, and while the points aren't where you want to see the unit, you know, scoring on a regular basis, you know, they've still done some good things. Enough? Probably not. But it just comes down to what you think, you know, who you think should get the opportunity. I look at it this way, underlying all of it, is the Broncos are trying to win right now. And they're trying to get to the playoffs this year. They're not thinking about who's our long-term guy. Because right now, their guys are Bridgewater and Lock. And if it's an emergency, Rippon. That's it. Those are the three choices you have and that the Broncos have. And to me, it's not even close that Teddy Bridgewater needs to be the starting quarterback, and, you know, hopefully he can play a little more consistently. Hopefully they can score 28 points a game. If they score 28 points a game down the stretch, it's going to get real interesting over the next 5-6 games. I guess there's 5 left now, right? So, I at some point I just go, hey, agree to disagree. If that's the way you feel, great. I don't see it that way at all. I'm with you.
Mike Rice, 850 KOA Broncos Radio Network with us today on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network. And I think some of the moves that George Payton's made, I know we've talked about this a little bit, Mike, but Stephen Weatherly, the trade of the Vikings, he's come in and been a really nice addition as that, you know, situational pass rusher. Likewise with Young, who they got in the deal with the Rams at that inside linebacker spot. I thought Kenny Young and Baron Browning both played really, really well this past Sunday at those inside linebacker positions. The moves that the George has made, for the most part, maybe the exception of Mike Boone, has not panned out, and that was, of course, before the start of the season. But overall, he's hit pretty well on draft picks and also moves that he's made in terms of trades.
Absolutely, and I think a lot of those moves are the reasons that the Broncos, or certainly part of the story as to why they're, you know, what, 6-5 and heading into it, 6-5, right? Do I have that right? It sounded weird.
It seemed like they should be 6-5, but yeah, they're 6-5.
Yeah, exactly, and have a, you know, they're playing for basically a share of first place this weekend. Now, again, I don't know how many of us would go out and bet any amount, substantial amount of money that the Broncos are going to go to Arrowhead and win, but they got an opportunity, so let's see what happens. But, you know, with Mike Boone, I mean, injuries obviously, you know, kind of short-circuited his season way back in training camp, and I still think, you know, next year he'll probably be a guy that figures in if he can stay healthy. So I love what George Payton's done. It gives me a lot of faith in, you know, the draft this year. Gives me much more faith in potentially finding the guy at quarterback, hopefully a young guy, but, you know, maybe an Aaron Rodgers becomes available. Who knows? Certainly he's going to have the option to do a lot of different things with all the cap space, with the cash on hand, and with the draft picks, as George himself has talked about. So I think they're positioned pretty well. And through it all, Jim, they're still in the hunt for a playoff spot this year, and maybe a little bit more. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't expect them to win the division. I'm not going to try and, you know, go that far. But They've got a chance to. They've got three or four division games left, and two of them against the Chiefs that I think are the team most people would pick to win the division at this point. So I think through all of this, the Broncos, at least right now as we talk this week, today, are in maybe as good a shape as we could have expected before the season.
Mike Rice, 850 KOA, Broncos Radio Network, joining us today on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network. Let's take a moment to talk about PS2, Patrick Surtain, the second, the two picks, and of course the last one was a pick six that really slammed the door on any hope that the Chargers had of coming back in that game. And for those that question why Denver didn't get Mac Jones or Justin Fields, and while Jones has played great, he's been by far the best of the rookie quarterbacks. A reminder that you got to have guys that play the way that Patrick Surtain does in the secondary, especially in the AFC West with all those quarterbacks. You need ball hawking corners and safeties, and Patrick Surtain showing why Denver took him, that they felt like he was the best defensive player in this last draft.
They have that saying for good players, you got to have dogs. You got to have those junkyard dog types who are just flat-out good players, and Patrick Surtain is one of those guys. I mean, what he's been able to do, and I think what he'll continue to do and develop is really fun to see. And as long as, he's happy, and as long as I think the Broncos are willing to pay him, I think he'll be in a Broncos uniform for a long, long time. I think he's one of those type of players. I mean, you never know. I don't want to put the cart before the horse, so to speak, and yet he's off to a really good start, Jim, and it's fun to see because you have a lockdown corner or two. All of a sudden that gives whoever's calling the defense a lot of different options because you don't have to worry about one of the better receivers or maybe the best receiver on the other team because you've got your guy that can always match up against him. And I think that's a great luxury, and I think it's a tribute to Surtain and what he's been able to do. In the way he's come in and worked. Do you think back to training camp when a lot of the veterans were saying, he carries himself like a veteran? I think we're finding out now that all wasn't just talk. I think Patrick Surtain is the real deal.
Mike Rice, 850 KOA, Broncos Radio Network, also, of course, one of the voices of the Rockies right here on the Team Sports Network. Let's talk quickly about some hot stove league news, Mike, with John Gray signing the deal to go and pitch for the Texas Rangers. So the Rockies will be looking for someone to fill that spot in the rotation. And it sounds like the Rangers also have a real strong interest, and his name has been linked to them for a long time since he is from Texas, and that's Rocky shortstop Trevor Story.
Well, let's take the second one first. With the Rangers agreeing with Semien and Seager for about $500 million, I would personally be a little bit surprised if they fit Trevor into that as well. And I don't know what the Rangers' plans are other than they have spent a ton of money, and they said they would. I mean, they said they could increase their average pay or their payroll about $100 million for next year, year over year, and they're at about $76 million more already. Could they sign Trevor? Sure. He's a hometown guy down there, and he's obviously a very good player. I would be surprised at this point on that one. That's not to say Trevor will be back. I think it's, certainly less than 50-50 that he'd be back with the Rockies, but I don't think it's impossible, and we've said that all along, Jim. With John Gray, I mean, I find it interesting, not surprising, that, the immediate narrative from a lot of folks, again, in social media, is, oh, the Rockies just completely botched it. This is what I think happened, and I don't know for sure, but I think the Rockies put a value on John Gray, and the Athletic reported it to be 3 to 4 years and $35 to $40 million was the offer that they made Gray. And it doesn't sound like John went back and said, what about more? It just sounds like he got more from Texas and wanted to go there. And so given what John did the last 2 months of the season, when he really struggled, he was not the same guy. I understand why they put that offer where they did. The other side of the coin is, let's see what the Rockies do. If they do nothing and they simply let him walk, okay, then we can discuss that. But we're still very early in the process. And, oh, by the way, there could very well be a lockout come Wednesday night, Thursday morning at midnight. So that's going to put a kibosh on any other free agent dealings, at least until the labor situation gets figured out. So I understand people's frustration with John. I mean, it sure sounded like a deal was going to get done back around the trade deadline when they pulled him off the market. Do the Rockies deserve criticism? Possibly. I still need to wait and see how the story ends and kind of see what facts come out.
In the case of Trevor, I mean, now that, you know, you're right, Texas, I mean, their name had been linked to him before. Obviously, they're out of the conversation with their signings. Sounds like Detroit's still a possibility, though Carlos Correa could end up there.
And Baez, Javi Baez, too, now.
Yep, Javi Baez, according to reports, close to signing a six-year deal with the Tigers. Also, the Dodgers have been on that list as well as far as the odds of places that Trevor goes. Where do you ultimately think Trevor's story ends up?
That's a really good question. I don't have a feel for that. I mean, I'm not trying to get anybody's hopes up, but I think it's possible he winds up back with the Rockies. The question is, you know, would he be happy doing that, or would he see that as the consolation prize? I don't know. The Dodgers situation is interesting. Yes, they lose Corey Seager, but they obviously, I mean, when they traded with Washington and picked up not only Scherzer but Trey Turner, you know, they knew that Corey Seager was going to be a free agent. So I thought that was a really good move for the Dodgers because they could slide him in at shortstop. If they're able to re-sign Chris Taylor, that could be an option too, and keep Trey Turner at second. And they do want to keep Chris Taylor, it sounds like. Does that mean they wouldn't spend for Trevor? It's possible. Again, I'm not sure that I see that as being the direction that the Dodgers want to go. And I'm just speaking as an outsider, kind of trying to figure out the lay of the land a little bit. It's possible. I don't know if that's a direction they'd want to go. It was interesting, too, and I don't know. I think it was John Heyman who tweeted yesterday that in a reversal, or to paraphrase, you know, the Rockies are back in on Trevor Story. They've never been out on Trevor Story. Bill Schmidt has been very clear about Trevor. He loves Trevor Story. He'd love to have Trevor back. And, you know, this narrative that gets, you know, developed now about the Rockies sort of being out on Trevor, well, if they have been out on Trevor, it's been because of Trevor's side, not because the Rockies didn't want him back. I don't know if they'll get him back, but, you know, we'll see what offers Trevor has, solid ones, and we'll see where he ends up. I don't have a feel for, though. I really don't. I know Philly's been kind of poking around on him, too. And I'm not trying to cop out. I just don't know how that's all going to... Sure. And it sure looks like, you know, the number of chairs left in the musical chairs game for free agent shortstops is kind of dwindling down a little bit.
Yes,
Trevor's
it is.
Still looking for one.
Yeah, it may be where his best option is where he's at right now, and that's with the Colorado Rockies. Hey, Mike, I always appreciate the time. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
You got it, Jim. Thanks to you.
Take care. Mike Rice, 822-KOA Broncos and Rockies Radio Network. So, you know, it was Semien going to the Rangers, Seager, you know, if it's Baez and Correa in Detroit, okay, that takes Trevor out of that conversation. Max Scherzer, of course, going to the Mets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from a different positional standpoint, but just some of the names that are out there. You know, I could see where Mike is right about this, that Trevor may have to look around and go, maybe the best place for me, at least for the short term, is where I'm at right now. We'll see what happens. All right, 841. Jim along with the Buckeye Boy. Text or call us 970-242-1340. You had some of those Bridgewater numbers. You want to read the text, too, that,
yeah,
that
me,
kind of goes along
let me
with
get
this?
To it, okay. There's a few to dig through here.
Because you yes. You were doing some research on this while I was talking to Mike.
There's a text here that says, let's be honest here, Bridgewater pads his stats and we are getting blown out. So I went and looked. And I'm going to call blown out as down where you need two touchdowns at any yeah. point in the game where you need two touchdowns.
Yeah.
So 11 points or more. Teddy Bridgewater has three such games this season, and the numbers aren't great. He has, in the Pittsburgh game, 256 of his 288 yards came from the very first point they were down 11 points. Now, they got closer, then they got farther away. In the Vegas game against the Raiders, 235 and two touchdowns of his 334 yards. So that's about 70% of his yardage came from the point where they were down two scores.
Right.
And then against Philadelphia, 37 yards of 226. People think that they got blown out in that game. They were in that game until the fumble recovery.
And that it was the final play of the third quarter.
Right. And against Baltimore, he got knocked out in the second quarter. They were only down 10 points in that game. And I was looking. I'm like, okay. So if you're so much in favor of Drew Lock that Teddy Bridgewater's stats are all via getting blown out, let's look and see just how good Drew Lock is. So Teddy Bridgewater, 3 games this season. Drew Lock has 6 games of his starts as a Bronco to where he's been in and they've been down 10 points. One of those, actually two of those happened early second quarter. So, you know, let's just put that out there. But 56, 71, 55, 77, 64, 51%. Those are all percentages of his yards in those games where they were down 2 scores came after they were down at least 2 touchdowns. So 63% of his yards in those 6 games over the course of his career have been when they're getting blown out. For Teddy Bridgewater, it's about the same, 67. So right in the same area. And over the season stats, Teddy Bridgewater is a Bronco, Drew Lock is a Bronco. So Teddy's season this year, Drew Lock's entire career, they're about the same, 22 and 21%. So if Teddy Bridgewater's stats are from getting blown out, Drew Lock has statistically the same amount of stats.
Yeah, the numbers are essentially dead even.
And Mike, that's middle school Mike, the lover of Drew Lock, the 0-17 under Drew Lock instead of possibly playoffs with Teddy Bridgewater. He's also in that, you know, Drew Lock, or the Broncos offense is 11th worst. They're 21st in points right now. Do you know what they were last year with Drew Lock leading the charge?
They were worse than that.
28th.
Yeah.
Teddy, or Drew Lock, he played in the Baltimore game. He had 12 of 21, not good, 113 yards, an interception, took 3 sacks, scored 0 points. And in the Chargers game, 4 of 7, 26 yards, an interception, a sack fumble, which the Broncos recovered.
Fortunately, yeah, they got back on it.
He had 1 touchdown, which wasn't his. Teddy Bridgewater essentially got them into the red zone, by the way. Well, people forget that. Oh, Drew Lock led a touchdown drive. Yes.
That was the Javonte Williams touchdown run, wasn't it, mm-hmm. on that drive?
Yeah, it was a touchdown drive of about 50 feet for Drew Lock.
Yeah.
So,
like the Tim Tebow Bears game, yes. Going to drive them for the winning field goal. They marched them like 10 yards or 15 yards.
Tim Tebow beat the Chiefs in Kansas City. Well, scoop and score with 2 minutes left helps. So let's, you know, you got to place.
That was the Manning game, the scoop and score.
Oh,
Jamal Charles. Yeah, that was a Thursday night Manning
game. The point still stands.
Right.
If you're going to knock Teddy Bridgewater for things, Drew Lock does the exact same thing, but worse.
His touchdown interception ratio, fumbles, those numbers are decidedly in favor of Teddy Bridgewater.
Teddy Bridgewater has 311 more pass attempts and 3 more interceptions than Drew Lock.
Over a career that started, what, 2014?
No, that's this year.
Oh, that's this year. Okay, I thought it was over the... Mm-hmm.
Teddy Bridgewater, 339 attempts, 5 interceptions. Drew Lock, 28 attempts, 2 interceptions.
Okay, I got confused on that for a moment. Thank you.
Sorry, my wording is a little weird.
It's okay.
Teddy Bridgewater may not be the answer.
And I don't
Drew
think
Drew Lock's not either.
Yeah, long term, I don't think Teddy is the answer. I think, if you can get Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not... Those guys aren't walking through that door right now.
There's one word different in each sentence, other than the names. Teddy may not. Drew Lock is not.
Yes. There's uncertainty about Teddy going forward as being the guy in Denver. You just look at the numbers, and Drew Lock's just—he's just not the guy.
The Broncos are 6-5. I mean, people are acting like Teddy Bridgewater's out there with a 3-11 football team.
And his consistent play's been a big part of the reason why they're where they're at right now. He has 14 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Do you think Drew Lock would be there at that point, at this point of the season? No, because Drew Lock is Drew Lock. He will continue to try to extend plays where it's just sometimes you have to know when to hold him, know when to fold him, know when to walk away. He doesn't know how to do that.
Through 11 games last year, you know how many multiple turnover games the Broncos had last year? 8.
Yeah.
You know how many they have this year?
I'll say less than 4.
Less than 2.
Oh, wow. Okay.
1.
What does that tell you? That's why Teddy Bridgewater's starting for this football team.
First of all, it's hilarious.
Warp twisted individuals. Yes.
Yeah!
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team.
We got it together, didn't we?
All right, coming to the stage, yeah. It's Amber. We've Remember, everybody, $14 kamikaze.
Let me ask you a question. Do I make you horny, baby? Do I?
I mean, really, when you really sit and think about it, isn't it really, really nice?
Get those dollar bills out. It's time for pole dancing.
All right, it's time for our top five NFL, top five college football, top five favorite Beatles songs with the Peter Jackson documentary out right now on the Beatles' final days. All right, so we'll get things started with our honorable mention. Do you have an honorable mention this week, by the way?
I do. I have the Tennessee Titans as my NFL honorable mention.
All right. So, for my honorable mention... Gotta get to the right place here. I've got the Cincinnati Bengals after a very impressive win, most dominant win ever over their rivals, the Pittsburgh Steelers. I've got Joe Burrow and Cincy as my honorable mention. So, since you got engaged over the weekend, we're gonna let you. You're gonna go.
All right. Well, thank you. My number five team, the Tampa Bay Bucks. They're not playing great. They're not playing 100%, but they're trending. The kids like to say they're trending in the right direction. I feel that they're gonna get right. Before the playoffs start, I have them number five right now.
I've got Kansas City number five. Defense has turned it around. The offense is playing much better. Mahomes has been much better. I've got Kansas City as my number five team right now.
The two teams you mentioned already, not anywhere in my top five or honorable mention. Okay. Enough. My number four team, they wrecked my team a couple weeks ago, and they're playing really well. I have the New England Patriots as my number four team.
And I have the Patriots as my number four team as well.
Number three, I have the Green Bay Packers. I just think that Aaron Rodgers, that team's got it figured out. They're starting to get healthier, except for Aaron Rodgers' COVID toe or whatever's going on there. But they're starting to play, and the weather's starting to play a factor in Green Bay, too. I have the Packers number three.
As far as my number three team, I have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Leonard Fournette, what a big game he had this last weekend with the three touchdowns against the Colts. That's a good win because that was a Colts team playing really well. They went into Indy and get the win there. I have Tampa Bay as my number three team.
Yeah, they're a pretty good team. I liked that win in Indianapolis. My number two team, it pains me to say it, but they defensively, we talked about, this isn't the same team as it was. Ray Lewis isn't walking through that door, but Baltimore smothered the Browns Sunday night. That defense is starting to get right. I have the Ravens number two.
I have Arizona as my number two team. Sorry, Petey. Sorry, Baltimore. Don't have my top five this week. I have Arizona number two. Concerning what they've been able to do with no Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins and the job that Colt McCoy has done when he's been in there, I just feel like that right now the 9-2 Cardinals are my number two team at this moment.
I have the Cardinals as my number one team because, one, I think they're playing really well. Kyler's been out for a while. No Hopkins for a while. I think they're using the bye week to get right. Next four games, at the Bears, home to the Rams, who they've already beaten, at the Lions, home to the Colts on Christmas Day. The Cardinals could be 13-2 when you wake up the day after Christmas.
My number one team's Green Bay. They get it done with Aaron Rodgers with the bad little pinky toe. But defensively, they continue to play great. Rasul Douglas had the game-icing pick six in the win against the Rams. Okay, maybe the Rams are not who we thought the Rams were going to be, right?
Yeah.
But still, an impressive win. Randall Cobb, of course, a guy that Rodgers lobbied to get back to Green Bay, had a really good game before he left the groin injury. A.J. Dillon played well. I have the Packers as my number one team this week.
So we move on to college. I have my honorable mention. Wisconsin. Come on, Scotty. Don't let me down. Don't let me down. You got to get them. Come on, Badgers. Little jump around. That's my honorable mention.
I've got Notre Dame as my honorable mention team right now.
Yeah.
See how they respond with the Brian Kelly situation. They're still right there in the conversation to make the playoffs.
I have Notre Dame to come in my top five. My number five right now is Oklahoma State. That was a good, gritty win over Oklahoma. They needed a late touchdown in that one. I liked it. And they got Baylor coming up in the Big 12 championship game. I have the Cowboys number four.
I've got Oklahoma State number five right now.
Yeah, that's not a bad pick, considering that's the same one I have. Speaking of a gritty, gutty win, Alabama beating Auburn 24-22. Four overtimes, I saw that one.
Four overtimes?
Crimson Tide down to number four.
I've got Cincy at number four right now. Yes, I have them at number four right now after their win over SMU.
I know. I'm all out of whack going first. It gets me all out of
I
whack.
I know.
My number three team is the team Cincinnati has beaten. That's their only loss at home, but they whacked Stanford after whacking Georgia Tech. Notre Dame's at number three right now for me.
I've got Alabama. I'm just not as impressed with the win over Stanford. They're just David Shaw's team's not what it once was. That program isn't. I've got Alabama. Even though it was, you know, a four overtime game against Auburn, big rivalry game, the Iron Bowl. I have Alabama number three.
I have Cincinnati sitting as my number two team. I like the Bearcats.
I have Michigan number two.
I don't know why.
I wonder why.
I just was finding a way to not put them in.
And so do you have for number one?
I have Georgia number one.
Georgia number one for me as well. All right, our top five favorite Beatles songs.
I'll just blow through my top five. Honorable mention, Revolution. 5-1, Come Together, Get Back, Twist and Shout, When I Saw Her Standing There, and Hey Jude is my favorite Beatles song.
All right, honorable mention, Yesterday. 5-1, Maxwell Silverhammer. Love that song because it's just so quirky.
Yeah.
And it's dark. While My Guitar Gently Weeps with Eric Clapton on it.
Great song.
Hard Day's Night, Get Back, A Day in the Life. Because it's just such a trippy tune. Those are my top five.
I whiffed on My Guitar Gently Weeps.
That's okay, man. That's okay. All right. Mav Day, Hour 3 coming up next. Text or call us 970-242-1340.